Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and I'm joined today by John Paskowitz. Now, I've been stumbling on James Kovacevic's name in a couple of episodes. So, did I do reasonably well with your name, John?
Yes, Fred, you sure did. It's Paskowitz. It's only three syllables. It might look bad, but it's really not.
That's right. Yeah, Paskowitz. All right.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Got it. All right. Thanks. And no guarantees next time I introduce you. So it's taken me months. Apparently, when I was growing up with my last name, I didn't learn how to pronounce it until, I think, second grade. Huh. My grandfather was coaching me, you know, basically on that. But yeah, maybe we should rename the show, the guys with long last names. I don't know if Adam would go for that, Adam Burrett.
No. So. Yeah, some of the other guys don't have that bad a name. But
that's right. Well, anyway. What can we do? You know, one of the things, and I'm glad you're joining the show, is because you bring in one of the things that we talked about when you and Kirk and I did a couple of episodes, and why I really wanted to get you back on the show, was this concept of design reviews based on failure mechanisms. And one of the things I get questioned on regularly, especially by directors of engineering, is how can we get more value from these design reviews? You know, we have this stage gate process. We have to go through these reviews, and sometimes they're just dog and pony shows, and we're spending more time making slides than we are making the product. And other times we're not really sure if we had enough of a review, you know, from the engineering level kinds of stuff. And so, I mean, you've seen this, I'm sure, quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done a variety of design reviews in different product development methods. I've got experience with the traditional stage gate and with lean and agile product development as well. And I think one of the things I've seen that works well is part of it is a status of the project, how we're doing on development. But I think it needs to get focused on risks fairly quickly. And one of the things that have worked well in the design reviews I've been involved in is identifying the risks at the point we're at. What have we done to address those? And then what are the corrective actions going forward? And these can be not only engineering risks, but also programmatic risks. That's where the design review based on failure modes kind of fits in, because there you're doing that early risk assessment, you're monitoring progress on addressing and mitigating those risks, and then the actions going forward to the next decision point where we do another design review and look at progress on addressing those. During the design reviews, you kind of look at it, are the risks so great that we need to either pause the program or cancel it or whatever the case may be. So it plays into the decision point.
Well, doesn't that same approach, though, apply in day-to-day decision-making? You know, a designer is troubleshooting a board or early prototype and is looking at it going, you know, this approach I'm using is just not going to work. And then they raise a flag, basically. And that's part of that process. And the design review is a more formal basis? Is that?
It's a way to get a larger group of people involved. A lot of those, like the ones you mentioned, the designers are making decisions like that all the time. But when you get prior to making one of the decisions to go to the next phase of the project, for example, there's the more formal review. And this, you get the leadership involved in it and a broader spectrum of people on the project team to look at it. And this is an opportunity for designers to bring forth these kinds of things they've discovered and Is that going to impact how we decide to go forward on the project? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And do we regroup at that point and go a different direction, or we have to replace that part of the system with something else because this one just doesn't work or whatever? So it kind of leads into the decision making that way.
Yeah, and I like the idea that it's a risk-based idea, is that, you know, if I'm looking at it from a reliability point of view, if I'm looking at an approach or a component or something, and there's either unknowns of how long it'll last or will it work in our environment, I mean, early on the action items might be, let's investigate that. Let's mm-hmm. create a test for that. Let's get some more data. And then along that way, we learn things, and there may still be outstanding questions. You know, like there's a 80% chance, as far as we can tell from engineering judgment, that this component will last 5 years. And then it becomes a business decision. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of the Samsung engineers, you know, raised the flag at a design review saying, you know, this battery might catch on fire.
yeah, we'll probably never know that. But I'm sure some of them were aware of risks involved in, and from what I've read on articles on it, they're the Korean way of doing development and business is very command oriented. It's almost like a military organization where mm-hmm. it's all top down direction, and you will do this and mm-hmm. follow orders. So I'm not sure how much feedback they're really allowed to give, you know. So it's that may be part of the problem that led to it. It's just
that, it might be. And like you said, we'll never know, because it's also, you don't want to create shame for your leadership and for your team and the manager and things like that.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's a cultural part. One of the things I found, though, is, you know, in the U.S., if somebody sees something that's wrong, especially in a more mature development culture, meaning that it's safe to raise issues, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's where the management team really genuinely wants the feedback. It allows us, with this process of, you know, doing a good design review, it is a discussion. It is helping the decision makers understand what the risks are so they can make well-informed decisions. I don't know that that avoids all of the problems or all of the issues. I'm certain it doesn't.
Yeah. There's always internal politics in every organization, and how much freedom there is to bring forth problems and issues. But like you said, I think it kind of does improve with maturity in the process. And it's, having been through a transition to lean product development, mm-hmm. that really kind of creates a culture for doing exactly that. It's more of a team-based project management where things are shared regularly. There's a what they call an obeya in Japanese. It's a team room where everything is kind of posted on the walls around the room. So mm-hmm. anybody can walk in there at any time and look at the status of the project. And so the DRBFM, the design review based on failure modes, is initiated and posted in there. And then team members update things as they discover them. Okay. And then when you do get to the decision points, the review is actually done in that team room, and you go around and look at the status of different issues, and team members present what they have learned up to that point. It's a learning-based system, really.
Okay.
And so that's kind of conducive to doing that, maybe more so than the old stage gate process where everybody made all these slides and sit in a room for a half a day or a day and go over all this stuff on the program. So it's I think it kind of facilitates the communication.
Well, even the stage gate, though, John, that process really wasn't, everybody was in their silos and, you know, created the slides. I think there was, when it's not done well, it's just all the decisions have already been made, but it's more mm-hmm. of a sharing across the silos type communication. I think that's not terribly effective. When it's an open discussion, and it's hard to do with 50 people in the room. What I've seen in StageGate programs is oftentimes it's a lot of discussions for the weeks leading up to the event where we get pizza, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of pre-work that goes into it, and they're working out which things are have we really addressed, and what are the ones that we want to raise in the final presentation. So there is that interface going on informally before the actual scheduled formal review.
One of the things that's funny, though, and is that the one-on-one discussions can get you so far. So if I was an engineer or a reliability engineer, and I'm raising an issue, and I go talk to, say, a director of engineering and say, hey, this is an issue, here's the evidence, here's the data. And he nods his head and he says, I get this. He asks a bunch of questions. And he says, yeah, we need to do something about that. And then we get into the group, right? It might even be a smaller group that's doing this review. And now the group brings a different dynamic to the decision making. Mm-hmm. And so how do you plan the one on, when you mentioned politics, that's what reminded me of it, is that there's all these different motivations of how people behave in a group that's often very different than one-on-one. And so how does a design review, the planning part, how can you best prepare for that? And I like this idea of the team room where everything, you're already doing stuff in a team already. Mm-hmm. Does that really get rid of some of that politics?
I think it does, because, engineering directors, project leaders, even senior management can go in and walk the management by walking around, go and look at the team rooms and see what people are doing and begin to formulate questions. And I think it kind of facilitates that communication. But you're still going to have the organizational politics in terms of what are middle managers going to actually escalate to senior management in terms of decisions going forward with the project. So there's always that politics of, is there pressure to meet schedule and we're just going to press on regardless, or are they actually going to address the issues? And that's hard to get around.
It's funny how the tolerance for risk changes after you have a field problem.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
You become very conservative and listen to the test results. Even though it hasn't really changed, it gets a whole different spin after you do a recall. It's amazing. Unfortunate, but amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So part of this, in talking about failure modes, one of the issues I've run into is that, well, that's hypothetical. You've had one failure out of your three prototypes. How do you know that's going to affect our production? I mean, there's this notion of just brush it off. That's a one-time event. That's a prototype.
Yeah.
I mean, the design reviews are, it's not opinion. When I think of an effective design review, it's based on the evidence and the information you have available, not just, they'll solve that. My favorite one time, John, was, we'll make up for that in ramp. When we go to high volume production, that won't be a problem.
Yeah, right. So, I agree. It absolutely should be data-based as much as possible. So it's, present test data very effectively and show what you do have. And if it's a test in progress, here's what I've got to date. Here's how far we plan to run. And here's the trend we expect out of the data we have at this point. And then don't just, there's always going to be the questions on, we don't have enough data, so we need to continue that test further. Or the other thing that happens is, we've got enough data, let's terminate that test and move on to something else. Mm-hmm. It's from the reliability engineer's perspective, it still may not be enough data to do a good analysis. So, that's what you have to do. You present what the data you have and what the data tells you. And that's always the most effective way.
Yeah, I was fortunate earlier in my career, and I've mentioned it on this show a number of times, is that from the general manager on down, it was show me the data. And it was always, if you made a proposal, where's the evidence? If you want to make a recommendation, where's the test results? Or it was just driven throughout the organization. That, I mean, my manufacturing manager was, your charter is to do an experiment every day. And part of it was so we learned the tools and learned how to present results. But it was, it was so important that we have the data. And I think this design review process, it should be very, very data rich, not fancy slide rich.
Yeah, that's right. And the design review based on failure modes, as I mentioned in the earlier podcast on it, draws a lot on the previous system data. And most products we do are evolutionary. Mm-hmm. We're taking a basic product we build or a technology we use and then adapting or enhancing it to meet the new needs that we have. So you got that baseline data of experience with products that we have in general. And this is issues we run into there in the field. And you can tie it to that. And this approach that we're using this time is going to overcome that. And here's the data we have that shows it is better than what we previously had in the field and so on. Those kind of things are a more effective way to present the results.
Yeah. People are good at making comparisons. It helps us to frame, you know, where we're at. Mm-hmm. I've also seen that limit what you're allowed to go do testing is you can only test the test protocols basically that we've done before. So we can do the comparison. And I tried making the argument once and it was in a design review. I says, well, it doesn't really make sense to add visual inspection as your only evaluation of these solder joints because it's a ball grid array. You can't see the solder joints. And they insisted that the only verification we're going to do to check if they're good is look at them. Well, you can't, come on guys, you can't see them.
Yeah.
Well, how if you, you know, and it was kind of around, and finally we ended up using x-ray equipment. We bought some systems so we could evaluate it. And I ended up spending hours and hours looking at small black dots on an x-ray screen of these solder joints.
I think it was at RAMS a couple of years ago. I did see a presentation on the an x-ray technique that actually allows better viewing of ball grid arrays, and you can actually see where they are, have broken connections and so on. It's pretty, so they've advanced the x-ray technology in that regard. But
oh yeah, it's gotten there, but it's this notion of, well, you can only do what we've done before.
Yeah. The argument there obviously is, yeah, then we can compare it more effectively. But at some point you have to move on to new ways of testing and doing things because the technologies you're evaluating are different than what you did before, and the previous techniques don't work. And the ball grid array is an example of that.
That's right. Yeah, it was we were doing a kind of a final sign-off review and for this ball grid array package. And this was years and years ago, before anybody really knew that these things were super solid. They were kind of hard to fail, and so I have a bunch of sample boards and I pass it around the room and everybody was concerned about solder joint fatigue. And I did a long thermal cycling test. I did a bunch of shock and vibration tests. I did manufacturing tests. I did all kinds of stuff. And I was presenting all that data. And I think it was the procurement manager. I don't remember which guy it was, but it was one of the guys. He pulls out his keys and he has my test board with a couple of these components on it. And so he takes his key like a lever and pries the edge of the board. And he's trying to pop the component off just to see, you know, kind of like a pull test almost. Mm-hmm. And he breaks off the edge of the ball grid array has a small circuit board. Mm-hmm. Underneath the chip, and then underneath that board is all these little spheres of solder, and he's chipping off the edge of it because it just wouldn't separate.
Yeah, you got so many contact points that it's held pretty securely.
It's pretty solid. So I walk over while I'm making the presentation. He's chipping this thing away, and I'm like, "Here, this is do you want to see the ball grid or the solder joints?" And he goes, "Yeah." And so I take the board, and I just flex it. I take my right hand and push down, rotate right, and the other one rotate counterclockwise, and do that twice, and all of the parts just fall right off. And he looked at it like, whoa. He's like, does that mean they're not that solid? I says, well, don't do that with the board.
Yeah.
But other than that, you can't get it.
Yeah. It, twisting and stuff of boards have caused problems. There's one classic one is ceramic capacitors.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly if they're towards the edge of the board. And sometimes just the handling and production and installation results in crack damage to them, and then they end up failing.
Well, that brings up one other note here on, you know, back to design reviews is, you know, you brought up crack capacitors or ceramic capacitors. That mm-hmm. They're very fragile. That seems to get forgotten. And there's other things like that, right, that we learn as an organization or even as an industry. And how do you, in this design review by failure modes, is that like the FMEA's role to bring that knowledge back into it? Or is that inserted in the design review itself? Remember capacitors crack, and then we look at that.
Yeah, that's part of the intent of the design review by failure modes is to go back and the team does the first part of it, and then the reviewers add their things in. That's to bring in this knowledge base of past experience. Mm-hmm. And the newer, younger engineers on the team may not be aware of some of those past historic.
Or like bare silver knowledge on the board doesn't work. And capacitors.
So when the reviewers look at it, they bring those things in and add them in as concerns that need to be addressed that, mm-hmm. Based on our previous knowledge and our knowledge base that we've built. This could be a problem. You need to look at that. And so that's an action item going forward to evaluate that particular aspect of the design. It's very much a knowledge-based system, and it's kind of the way the DRBFM came out of Toyota and their product development system. Mm-hmm. And they have an extensive knowledge base of past products, probably more so than a lot of companies do. And they always start with that and then try to minimize change, just do what's needed to meet new requirements and build that knowledge base. And that's always brought forward in these design review based on failure modes. So, yeah, that's a way to help communicate that corporate knowledge or organizational knowledge to the particular design team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. One of the things I've run into is that people would hesitate to invite me to a design review because I'm the reliability guy and I tell them how it doesn't work. It's going to fail there. It's going to fail there. It's going to fail there. And, you know, I'm the dooms, you know, guy.
Yeah.
And I had one designer pull me aside. It says, you know, why don't you tell us how it's going to work? You're going to say the same thing, but this will work for 2 days and this will work for 3 days. does that sound better now?
Yeah. The design review shouldn't really be in all A, everybody agrees. Okay. We're moving forward and end up finding the problems later. No, it should be the communication of concerns and issues that have been raised by what we've done so far and what we've learned. So it has to be a two-way communication. It can't be just everything's great. Okay, check the box and move on.
Yeah, that
doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah, that's very, very true. So I'm interested in if our listeners have, you know, what do they think of their design review process? And there's all these different ways of developing products and systems and installing equipment and all these things. And we often do a design review at some or multiple stages of our programs. What works for you and what doesn't work? So you can find this episode at reliability.fm, and over under Speaking of Reliability, you can find this show and you can add comments and notes, and we'd love to hear from you. Plus, if you've got some great ideas, you know, let's add it to the discussion. We'd love to hear from you. And then furthermore, if you have ideas or topics you'd like us to talk about, if we touched on something but we didn't go down that path, you know, jump into the conversation. Let us know what you'd like to hear. So John, hopefully we sparked a few thoughts or ideas and maybe a couple of takeaways. And we'll just wrap this one up right here.
Okay. Thank you, Fred. Good discussion.
Yeah. Thanks, John. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.